So we're obviously we know what we're talking about in this class. We're talking about the life of Paul. And last class together, we kind of covered some introduction material about Paul and about his life. And we covered up to his conversion because it was Easter Sunday, and you got to do that. And so we covered up to his conversion and what that meant and the implications involved in his conversion. And so we're going to be looking at, we're going to kind of slow things down a little bit today, and looking at the events that happened just after his conversion. What did Paul do between conversion and baptism and putting on Christ to where we see him in Antioch and what he's doing in the missionary journeys? What is he doing during that period of time? So we're going to be looking at that, but that today. And then we'll go back also and start with some other information. But when you're talking about somebody in the Bible, and we're talking about specifically about Paul, where are we going to go to find information? And I think, can you go to slide 10 for me there? I'm sorry. Click on slide 10. But where do you go when you're looking for information? Where would you go in the Bible if you're looking at information for what's that? Acts of the Apostles. Why would we want to go to Acts of the Apostles?
The name suggested.
What's that?
The name suggested.
Does the name have any, and we look at the book of Acts, and you've heard about the old preacher joke, right? About this guy who was going to rob this lady, and the lady was, you know, she's a very devout Christian, and she has verses memorized, and this guy says, you know, tries to hold her up, and has a pistol, and gives her a pistol, and or points a pistol at her, and she just freaks out and screams Acts 2:38, and he goes running, and because she had an axe in 2:38. Anyway, so you haven't heard that one? Okay, all right, there you go. That's a preacher joke right there. I figured you guys have heard that one. Wow. Okay. So yes. So Acts of the Apostles with a C is what we're going to be looking at. Is there issues with the PowerPoint? Can we get it to slide 10? That is slide 10? Let's just fast forward then. My clicker's not working. Did I pull up the wrong one? Is that file... That's slide 10, and that's all we got? All right, so technology is awesome when it works, right? I may have put the wrong slide up there. Is there the slide? There should be a file 1-1- Apostle Paul should be the file. Is that the one? Slide 11. Okay. Well, while they're working on that, we'll go ahead and do it like old school. Like I actually give you the information, you don't look at it on the screen. Can we do that? All right. So if we look at Acts and we look at the book of Acts, what was the book of Acts? Who was it written by? Luke, right? Written by Luke. Paul actually talks about him in Colossians chapter 1, verse 14 as the beloved physician, right? And so we see Luke wrote the gospel of Luke, Steel Traps. And so he wrote the gospel of Luke. And when he wrote that gospel, he says in Luke chapter 1, verse 1, that he's recording an exact account of the events that took place. He's saying, you've heard a lot of people talking about this, and O Theophilus, I want to write to you and give you an exact account of what's happening. So he writes that, but he continues the book of Acts in the same form, writing to the same person. And so what's interesting, when you read the book of Acts, you see Luke was with Paul on many different things, and then there's times when he's not with Paul. If you've ever written a story and you're in and out of the story, what words do you use to see if that person's involved in it or not involved with it? We, they, right? We and they. It's an interesting study. If you're like, well, I don't know what I want to study this week. I don't know what I want to read about in the Bible. Go through the book of Acts and highlight we and they. Look at the events where Luke was with them and where Luke wasn't with them. All right, it's pretty interesting. It was actually one of the occasions I can remember off the top of my head was with in Philippi. When they went to Philippi, Luke stayed in Philippi, and the others went on. And that, at that change, it was then they went and they did this and they did that. He wasn't with them, yeah. And so, yes, sir. We together, and then they went and did such and such thing, right? And so that's exactly what we're, and we highlight that. So we see how Luke was with Paul. So he's obviously a good source for us when we get to the life of Paul. What about letters Paul wrote? Do you think he mentions anything about himself in the letters? One or two things, right? Did he write any letters? I mean, how many letters did he write? Do you remember? Can we list a few of them? Maybe it'd be easier to list the ones he didn't write in the New Testament. It would be easier, right? So Romans, 1st, 2nd Corinthians, Galatians, Ephesians, Philippians, Colossians, 1st, 2nd Thessalonians. He had all the T's, 1st, 2nd Thessalonians, Titus, right? Philemon, and maybe what? Hebrews. Why do we question Hebrews as far as who actually penned it? With his other letters, how did he go into his letters? I, Paul, an apostle of Christ, servant, and so we see that introduction. What do we not have in Hebrews? That introduction, right? And we don't have that same kind of conclusion. And a lot of his letters, I like to call them like the Pauline sandwich. His letters, because and some of his letters, especially when he has something hard he has to say, he kind of comes into it and says, you know, nice things about him, and I know about your faith and those kind of things, and people are talking these things about you, and then he hits him with what he really needs to talk to them about, and then he kind of closes off with, you know, the pleasantries, right? So I call it the Pauline sandwich, which psychologically is not a bad thing, right? You know, some people do that to you. They come up to you and say, oh, this and this and such and such and such, but, right? Like, oh, okay, here it is. Here's what we really need to talk about. And so Paul does that and uses that construct in a lot of his letters and a lot of the information he gives them. And so that's interesting. But we don't see that in Hebrews. So the book of Hebrews, awesome, here we are. I messed things up for you guys, I apologize. Awesome. Thank you for getting us back in between the operational parameters. Let's catch up here. So yeah, there they are. So Hebrews, people have said, well, maybe it was Apollos that wrote it, or maybe it was Barnabas that wrote, and there's other ideas, but those are some prominent ones, because Apollos was one who was mighty in the Scriptures, and we see that sort of message in the book of Hebrews. Barnabas spent a lot of time with Paul, and so maybe that explains why there's a lot of similarities between the book of Hebrews and Paul's writings. Others have said, well, maybe it's just somebody was sitting down and copied a sermon, transcribed a sermon that Paul gave, but didn't give the introduction, and that's what it is. So it is inspired. We know that it correlates with all of the Bible. It is. But as far as who exactly wrote it, we can't say exactly who, but it sounds a lot like Paul. So we put that question mark there because we can't say 100% certainty that it was him, but it sounds a lot like him. When you start reading his other letters and you read Hebrews, it sounds a lot of the same phrases and words he uses are there. So possibly Hebrews as well. So he's very prolific in his writing and the letters. Now, these things that are written, are they written to be put into a codex, to be put into a book? Were they written for that purpose? Why were these things written? What's that? For our learning, yes. Yes, to be handed down. They are inspired by God. God said this information needs to be given to these individuals. But why were they originally written? Yes, sir. Exactly. Exactly. Yep. Yes, sir. Exactly. So these messages were to Rome, to the Christians in Rome, in Corinth. And Paul was just the microphone. Paul was just the pen. Paul was just that individual that God gave that message to be given to them. And so these were letters that were written to these individuals that are still obviously impact our lives and are legitimate today because the information is from God. It is God-breathed, inspired. And so this is why we still have this information and still look to this information. So if we look at these letters, we're going to be looking at just what happens after the conversion of Paul. We're going to be looking at three specific locations. We're looking at Acts chapter 9, specifically in verses 19 through 30. I'm not going to put the whole passage up here for you, but Acts chapter 9, verses 19 through 30. What I want to do is as we skim through this section of Scripture, I want to kind of put the events in place that we highlight in this particular section of Scripture. Well, I want to put these up on the screen and kind of walk through what is being stated. Now, in Acts chapter 9, where are we in the whole work of the growth of the church? And what are we talking about specifically? What's already happened in chapter 7 and 8? We have the death of Stephen, all right? And we have the eunuch being on the road. Was saved as well. And so now we look at chapter 19. In chapter 19, verse 19. But at the beginning of the chapter, Saul is going to Damascus, right? And we talked about this last Sunday in his conversion. And now we see him. What does verse 19 say about where Paul is or what happens? What's that? He ate, which is good, because he had been doing what? Had been fasting. And we see that a lot in connection with any kind of spiritual situation. A lot of times there'll be fasting involved in that. And what else did he do? He took food and was strengthened. And then the last part of that verse, with the disciples there in Damascus. So he's strengthened himself. He spent time with the disciples there in Damascus. And he sat around and did nothing, watched Netflix, went through Stranger Things, binged through that. What did he do after his conversion? He started preaching. What's interesting, and immediately he began to proclaim Jesus. Do you have that word in? What does the King James say in verse 20? Immediately. Is that word important? I would think so. It's not like he hem and hawed about his decision. Well, I'm not sure. He was pretty certain about his decision, about what's going on in his life. Yes, sir.
I'm not sure where the other verse is, but he discusses that. He says that the Holy Spirit basically revealed all this. He didn't have specific knowledge of Jesus himself, but through the Holy Spirit, he was able to immediately start preaching.
Yes. There was a divine intervention as far as the information is given. You're getting ahead of us, Dirk, on our class there. But yes, that's happening. So immediately he begins preaching, and immediately he starts preaching Christ, who, like verses prior, he had been an enemy, right? So was there a change in his life at his conversion? Should there be a change in our lives at our conversion? Just right. There should be a marked difference. People could see that in Saul, who was, you know, later to become now going to be Paul. And so he makes this immediate change, begins preaching Christ, and people are like, wow, that's kind of interesting. Verse 21, what are the people, how are they kind of responding to this? They are amazed. This is the dude that was supposed to come here and kill us, and now he's like on our side. He's a switch hitter. So he's coming, and he's coming to be on our side, and he's preaching the Christ who he once spoke against. And so they're kind of questioning all this. Verse 22 and 23. So he switches teams. Grew in strength. And he switches teams, and now he's teaching against these individuals, right? Now he's teaching against them. So what happens when you start teaching against the Jews? What happened to Jesus? What did they want to do to Jesus? What did they do to Stephen? What are they going to do to Paul?
Stone him.
Stone him. So in this situation, they set this plot out to kill. Now, what happens? Is it something that Paul knows nothing about? I don't know they're trying to kill me. What does the text say as far as the events that took place with this plot. They found out about it. It got foiled, right? And so they were waiting where for him? At the gates. Well, if you're in a walled city, a protected city, you have very few entry points. So everything bottlenecks at those entry points. And so they're waiting for this guy to come in or out. At some point, he's going to leave the city, and we're going to nab him. And so what did the disciples do? They let him down in a basket, which I'm sure was an awesome ride. I'm not sure that it was like the tallest city, and I'm sure it was a better basket than like the little Easter egg wicker baskets. But anyway, so he is let down in a basket and escapes that scenario. Now, verse 26 and 27, what do these verses tell us took place? He went up to Jerusalem, and he says when he came to Jerusalem, he was trying to associate with the disciples, but they were all afraid of him. Why? Because the last time they saw this guy, he'd been killing them. They weren't privy to the information. It's not like they got on Facebook and said, "Oh, hey, look, he got converted." No, they were not privy to the information obviously he had changed. He's like, "No, I'm not that guy anymore." Okay, so he's trying to associate with the disciples, but they were all afraid of him, not believing that he was a disciple. But Barnabas. Along comes Barnabas. This is a huge deal for the life of Paul. Does Barnabas in the New American Standard, it says Barnabas took hold of him. Barnabas took hold of him. What does it say in King James? Took him. Barnabas never really let go of Paul. If you read through Acts, he never really let go of Paul, did he? I mean, they did a lot of work together. And he took Paul and said, "No, this guy's legit. This guy's on our..." And he begins to speak for Paul and be that kind of person that says, "Yes, he's the guy that he's on our side. He's been preaching the Christ." You guys at some point have been Paul and needed a Barnabas, and there have been times when you've been a Barnabas to other people, right? Barnabas put on Christ, right? You could tell Barnabas put on Christ. Christ was that intermediary for us did that for us and made that intercession. And in a similar fashion, Barnabas is kind of making intercession for Paul, saying, "Yes, this guy is on our side." And so he took hold of him, brought him to the apostles, and described to them how he had seen the Lord on the road and how he had talked with him, and how at Damascus he had spoken out boldly in the name of Jesus. All right, so this is what Barnabas does for Paul, and it's a great example of how we need to be the same in our lives. We see people who are coming in and are coming out of the world, as you said, and are still learning what it means to be a disciple of Christ, right? And are struggling with different things. And a Barnabas would take hold of that individual and say, "This is how we walk." Right? This is how, because when you're coming into the church, you're learning new words. You're learning a new way of acting. You're trying to put away old words and you're trying to put away old ways of acting. And so that takes time to change those kind of things. And so Barnabas took hold, and we need to do the same kind of thing with people. Take hold of them and help them walk closer with Christ.
Is Barnabas older?
We don't know exactly. We don't know. It could have been the case that Barnabas was older. But we don't know exactly age-wise of Barnabas. But it seems that way, right, that he would be somebody wise enough to do that. But he was spoken well of the church. Yes, sir?
Don't have to be
age. No, it doesn't. Yes, exactly right. It doesn't matter about age. We all are in a position where we need to learn and we all need to grow. But we're all different places in our walk and our growth Christian-wise with Christ. And so anyway, Paul takes that, or I'm sorry, Barnabas takes Paul and does that. Now, when Paul is in Jerusalem, now where was Saul born? Tarsus. Where did he grow up? In Jerusalem. So he's coming home. He's coming home when he goes to Jerusalem, and he begins to preach. Is it sometimes more difficult to preach in your own home than it is somewhere else? Anybody have any experience with that? Okay, so he comes home and begins to preach and teach there. He says, and he was with them, moving about freely in Jerusalem, speaking out boldly in the name of the Lord, and he was talking and arguing with the Hellenistic Jews. The Hellenistic Jews are those Jews that took Greek and Roman society and culture and kind of blended it with Judaism. And so we would call them the Sadducees, and those who had blended that sort of that culture together and kind of blurred the line between what it was to be a Jew and what it was to be Greek, and kind of just, you know, we're all the same and blended that. That never happens anymore. But anyway, so in this situation, he begins to talk with them, but they were attempting to throw him a birthday party, right? What were they attempting to do?
Stone him.
So there's another plot to kill him. There's another plot to kill him, and what did the disciples end up doing? But yes, so they learned of it, right? They knew that this was going to take place. They knew that there was this plot. And, you know, you can't keep anything like that secret from the Christians. Somehow they're going to find out. God's going to let them know. And so when they knew about this, what do? They take him up. Yeah, what's interesting, the word is down. They took him down to Caesarea Philippi, but if you look on the map, Caesarea is north. So what are we talking about? Jerusalem's on a mountain. So they took him down the mountain to Caesarea Philippi, and then he goes on to Tarsus, all right? We're going back to the place of our birth. So he goes back to Tarsus. You need to get out of Jerusalem. It's crazy here. It's too hot for you here, Saul, Paul. You need to go to Tarsus. Now, this is the version we read in Acts chapter 9. Let's go over to another chapter in Acts.
Look at.
We're getting ahead of us in our classes. We'll get to that. Yes, he does. He does. He does change. Yes, and
but it's in Acts.
Yes, mm-hmm. We will see that. Yep, yep. And so when we look in Acts chapter 22, we see a very different, well, not different, but we see something, some different information. What is happening in Acts chapter 22 that wasn't happening in Acts chapter 9? Where are we in the life of Paul? We've fast-forwarded quite a bit. We're now Paul. He's defending himself, right? He came into Jerusalem, and this is a situation where everybody told him, don't go back to Jerusalem. Everybody told him, and he talked to the Ephesian elders, they're weeping with him, don't go back to Jerusalem. And everybody said, but I got to go. And he goes back to Jerusalem, and he starts preaching and teaching again, and he knows what's going to happen, right? He starts preaching and teaching again because he really wanted them to be converted. Look in Romans chapter 10, in the first few verses there. Romans chapter 10, the first few verses. What did he say? What does he say about his desire that his people would be converted to Christ? What does he say in Romans chapter 10 in the first few verses? That they might be saved. But what is he willing to do? He would be lost. He would say, I would be lost. He knows the cost. He knows exactly what it means to say those words. He said, I would be lost if the nation of Israel would turn to God. So he desires fervently that they would be converted. And he goes back to Jerusalem. And he starts teaching something that's not really accepted in Jerusalem, right? They don't want to hear it. And they start doing what again? Stone him. Now, in this situation, we got to remember the Romans don't like all this uproar. Because uproar means we're going. Eventually, it's going to be against the government, and you know if they're not keeping the peace, if they're not keeping everything's quelled, and they have all these revolts. The Roman government has had revolt after revolt after revolt, and they don't like it. It's costly, it's expensive, and nobody likes it. Nobody wins, right? So, in this, they want to keep things copacetic, and so the Praetorian Guard, they rush in, kind of pull Paul out of the crowd. And as they're walking up the steps, Paul turns and delivers this message. All right, so that's the scenario. That's the scene. So things are kind of tense, right? Things are kind of, you know, just on the cusp of boiling over. And Paul delivers this message. And he begins to talk about, he says, Brother and Father, hear my defense. which I now offer to you. And when they heard him addressing in the Hebrew dialect, they stopped and listened. He's talking like us. Have you ever been somewhere where you're hearing everybody talk different, and then you hear somebody talking like you? Does it sound more clear? Does it sound more distinct? It's amazing when you go down to Miami and you hear Spanish, and then you hear somebody across the room speaking English. You can hear that, right? Right. So, and it's the same way. He heard them talking, or they heard him talking in this scenario. And he begins to talk about his life and how he grew up. But in verse 17, we want to talk about what happened. He mentions what happens after his conversion. In the beginning of verse 17. And he says here that he went to Jerusalem, all right? And it happened when I returned to Jerusalem that he said he was in the temple. He was in the temple and he fell into a trance. And what happened? Jesus said, hey, you need to leave. You need to leave this place. You do not need to be here, okay? And Paul speaks about, well, you know, verses 19 and 20, what does he say in verses 19 and 20? What's that? Yeah, and he begins to make a defense. Maybe they have a reason. He said, Lord, they themselves understand that in the synagogue, in one synagogue after another, I used to imprison and beat those who believed in you. And when the blood of your witness Stephen was being shed, I also was standing by approving and watching out for the coats of those who were slaying him. And so it could be taken different ways. We don't know exactly what he's trying to say. He's offering, so God says, go, leave this place. It wasn't a burning bush, right? It wasn't that kind of scenario, but it was a message from God saying, you need to leave this place. And Saul, it could have been that where he's saying, well, I persecuted the church. I deserve to die. I deserve whatever's coming to me, I deserve what's coming to me. Or it could have been, I'm the best person to talk to them. I know them. They know me. They know I'm one of them anyway. I used to persecute him, and I changed, and I know more about, I know the truth now. I'm the guy to be able to talk. So we don't know exactly what he's trying to say, but we do know he's trying to say, I need to stay here, is what it seems like, right? I need to stay here. Yes, there were times when Christ, and the text kind of says, they tried to grab hold of him and make him king, or they tried to grab hold of him and kill him. And the text makes it sound like he kind of just drifted through the crowd and got out of there. Like he did like this teleportation kind of whoop and got out of there. It doesn't really say exactly how he got out of the crowd, but he got out of the crowd because it wasn't the time. And in this situation, Christ is trying to tell him, it's not your time to die. I will tell you when you will die, and I will tell you how you're going to die. And which we saw in Acts, he says, I'm going to tell him how he must suffer and those kind of things when Ananias is talking to Christ. About these kind of events. And so he says, what does Christ say in beginning to say after verse 21? Leave, like emphatically, you need to leave now. Right? This is you need to get out of town. Now, so he leaves, right? Does this jive with what we read in chapter 9? Is this the same information that we read in chapter 9? All right, well, let's keep reading. Let's go over to Galatians, and we'll put all these three together and see what's going on here. Let's go over in Galatians. Galatians chapter 1. Galatians chapter 1, verses 11 through 24, we have this text where, again, Paul goes over this information. And in Galatians chapter 1, verses 11 and 12, where does he say his information came from? Came from the Lord. Now, when he's writing these letters, there are times when he has to defend his apostleship. Why would he have to defend his apostleship? Why would he... What's that? His past. Has your past ever haunted you? Okay, so his past... are there other reasons why he might have to defend his apostleship? You're not a real apostle. He wasn't the guy walking with Jesus. If anything, he was walking against Jesus, right? He was not the guy that was there speaking for Christ and following Christ as a disciple through all Galilee and all his ministry. He was the guy who was, you know, ministering against Christ. Yes, sir. Yes, exactly. And that's a big part of what Galatians is about, is because he's teaching true Christianity, not the Christianity with mixed in Jewish practices. And so he's in almost all of his letters, he's dealing with that same kind of construct, that don't allow the leaven of the Pharisees and leaven of the Jews to enter into and bind you again to the law that's not vigent, it's not active today. And so in Galatians, he deals with that rather specifically. And so in this text here, he has to defend his apostleship because he doesn't look like he wasn't the apostle like the other apostles were. And when they chose a new apostle in Acts chapter 1, didn't they have some criteria for a new apostle? They did, right? You had to walk with Jesus, you had to be with his teaching, you had to be through with him the whole time, and they hacked on criteria, and then they drew straws and, you know, Matthew. They literally drew straws. It wasn't like they used a dreidel or anything. They drew straws. And so he didn't necessarily fit that criteria either as far as an apostle, but he was selected, born out of due time, as he says in other places. And so in some cases, he has to defend his apostleship. So what does he say about his knowledge here? Why would this come up? I got my information from? Yes, straight from Jesus' mouth. It came straight from Jesus' mouth. I didn't get it from anybody else. So I would have you know, brethren, that the gospel which was preached to me is not according to man, for I neither received it from man, nor was I taught it, but I received it through a revelation of Jesus Christ. And we see that, obviously, you know, on the road to Damascus, there was that connection, there was that dialogue, and then obviously it happened later on. We don't have a copy of that. We don't know what happened with all that, and we'll get to that maybe in a moment. And so he was born out of due time. And so his knowledge was from Christ. And then verses 13 to 14 talks about his former life, how he used to act, how he used to be, and how they knew about that. They knew about his past. And then we see in verse 15 another one of these great, great phrases. This is how I used to be, but God. All right, verse 15. This is how I used to act, this is how I used to do, but God. And we all have that same scenario. But God made that sacrifice for me to be his child, right? And so we see this conversion, and we see that take place. Now, after his conversion, what does he say he did in verse 16? I went up and I spoke with everybody and said, is this for real? You know, what's going on? And they're like, yeah, this is how it works. And they kind of took him under his wing. And what does it say he did? Yes. And I did not immediately consult with flesh and blood. And so so there may be this kind of thing. Well, you're just a puppet of the apostles. You're not a real apostle. You're just a puppet of the apostles. You're kind of like a type 2 apostle, right? Yes, sir. I do not know. I don't know that we can really say what he's done up until when he's writing this letter. We don't have a number. I mean, he did, yes, obviously, but we don't have a number. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, and so the people in Galatia may not have seen the miracles that he's done, and he did some pretty awesome ones. Even his shadow was able to, you know, heal people. So, you know, he's a heavy hitter when it comes to those kind of things. But they may not have seen those kind of things. Again, they didn't have Facebook. Life would have been better for them if they had Facebook, right? So they couldn't communicate like we could now. And so in this situation, he's trying to defend who he was and what he's done. Now, he didn't consult with anybody with flesh and blood. But what did he do? What do we see here happening in verses 17 and 18? Let's break this down. Nor did I go up to Jerusalem. What? I didn't consult with flesh and blood, and I didn't go up to Jerusalem. Wait a second. Paul, that's not what you said. It's not what Luke said. It's not what you said in Acts chapter 22. And now you're saying you didn't go up to Jerusalem. So he says here that he didn't go up to Jerusalem, didn't consult flesh and blood to those who were apostles before me, but I went away into Arabia and returned once more to Damascus. This is new information that we have not heard yet, right? What is going on here? So he was in Damascus, didn't go up to Jerusalem, and he goes into Arabia. Now, when we say Arabia, we're not talking about Lawrence. What are we talking about when we talk about Arabia? Arabia. It's a. Everybody thinks that maybe, but he goes out into the desert. He goes out into the desert. Now, has anybody ever, after their conversion, after anything important, ever gone out into the desert? Has anybody ever done that? Nobody. Wow. So maybe Jesus went out into the desert. Moses, after he spent time in the desert. The Hebrew people spent time in the desert. Where did they learn about God? In the desert. Where did they find the law? In the desert. Did you know that to the Hebrew people, when you want to find pure religion, when you want to encounter God like Elijah did, you go to the desert? Could it have been that after such a huge change in his life and after he had to leave because they were going to kill him, I'm going to go to the desert? Get away from this situation. Elijah did, right? What did Elijah do? This great prophet of God, after the prophets of Baal were killed and fire came down from Mars, he goes, and then Jezebel wanted to kill him, and he's like, whoop, I'm gone. And he goes into the desert, right? I mean, not just like desert, he goes deep, deep in the desert. And God eventually says to Elijah, what are you doing here? What are you doing here? Can't stay here. Can't hide out. I got things for you to do. And he goes and he does those things. So it could have been that he's doing this very same. He's following this kind of prophetic model of going into the desert and spend that time. And this could have been where, Dirk, where he got more information from Christ. He spent time fasting and prayer. And we don't know how long he was there, but he was there for some time. And then he goes back to Damascus. All right? Then he goes back to Damascus in verse 17. So he goes back to Damascus. And once more, and then in verse 18, what happens? 3 years later, he goes up to Jerusalem, and that's where he sees James and Peter, or Cephas is what he mentions here. And then he was unknown to those individuals. Did I skip one? Okay, he was unknown. He went to after he was in Jerusalem, they tried to kill him, and he goes to Syria and Cilicia. And which is where Tarsus is, just so you know. And then God, what does it say in verse 30 about his life? Did I say 30? I'm sorry, I left that on there from other slides. His verse should be verse 24. I didn't edit that. So they glorify God in his life, and I didn't edit that verse. So when you copy and paste, you make sure you change things. That's a lesson for you guys. I put it up on purpose. So if we're going to harmonize these things, we look at these different timelines, are we seeing a contradiction? All right. Now, some people would say that this is a contradiction. Now, we're going to give you some information from a class I'm teaching the youth right now, but this is a classic biblical contradiction. They can't even in their own books, they can't get things correct. What some people would say, this is a contradiction of information. But it's not really a contradiction. They have to prove it's a contradiction. All we have to do is give them possibilities of an answer. They really don't know what a contradiction is sometimes. Sometimes we're talking not about the same place or the same thing, or even the same time in this particular case. In this particular case, time becomes our friend, or sometimes the same sense. So these are things to consider when it talks about a contradiction. Also, supplementation. In this situation, we're getting supplemental information about the events that took place. It's not a contradiction. We're just getting more information from different sources. And so this is not a contradiction. So if we look at a map, which I don't know if you guys can y'all see that very well? Okay. So he bounces back and forth. All right. So he starts where? In Damascus, right? And he goes into the desert, into Arabia. And then he comes back to Damascus. Then he goes up to Jerusalem, and then he goes to Caesarea, and then he goes up to Tarsus. Caesarea, then he goes up to Syria and Sicilia, which is where is the area. When you talk about Sicilia and Syria, you're talking about an area, and Tarsus is a city in that area, okay? So that harmonizes those different events that took place in Acts 9, in Acts 22, and in Galatians chapter 1. That harmonizes everything. Does that make sense? We're not dealing with the contradiction, but we're dealing with a time period of more than 3 years. So we're talking about years. So when we're reading Acts chapter 9 and we're reading Acts chapter 20, we kind of get duped into the situation. Well, this, like, the next day he went up, the next day he did this, and the next day he did that. But that's not how it works, right? He could have been in Damascus for years. We don't know how long he was in Arabia. And when he says, I was there for 3 years, he could have included his time in the desert in that three-year period when he's talking about those kind of things. So those are all things to consider when we look at this text. So next Sunday, we'll be looking at the events that took place immediately after this. Thank you very much for your time this morning.